Good afternoon. Welcome to the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host. It's great to be with you today. I hope you're enjoying your day here on the 26th of April as the year just continues to fly by. Telephone here, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. My plan today was to play for you some clips off of YouTube of William McDonough and some affiliated stuff, but I'm sorry to tell you that our internet does not appear to be working today, and I know that as listeners to KPFT, you're getting a little weary of hearing that the antenna doesn't work or the internet's not working, and so I apologize to you. I assure you that I don't like to receive this news when I come into the station, and I don't like to give you the news either, but I have to give you that news. If the link comes back, I will play those links for you. And if they don't, then they don't, and I'm just going to describe it to you. But let me just start right off by talking a bit about William McDonough, who spoke here as part of Progressive Forum the other night, and Randall Morton, who puts that show together, does a fantastic job of getting absolutely world-class guests, gets them to come to Houston. If you have not been to Progressive Forum events, you really, really owe it to yourself. I mean, the list is just unbelievable. I think he's got Bobby Kennedy Jr. coming in the next few months, and he's, you know, the list is a luminary of distinguished thinkers, many of whom share the ideas that that we believe in here at KPFT. So the other night I went, and it was William McDonough. Let me describe, if you don't know who William, if you do know who he is, then, you know, he doesn't need, you don't need me to introduce him to you, of course. But if you haven't heard of William McDonough, he is an architect, and who became prominent from a book that he wrote with another guy named Michael Braungart, a German scientist. The book that, and it's a book that I have talked about. It's been a long time since I have, but early in New Capital Show many years ago, I talked about it quite a bit. The book is called Cradle to Cradle. And I don't think that William McDonough has I don't think he's written another book since that time or since that book. But it really doesn't matter. The book Cradle to Cradle, at the time that it came out, which I don't remember the date, I want to say 2002 or something, three, it was so influential and has continued to be influential that if he never does anything else, he's done enough. It's really that type of book. The book Cradle to Cradle discusses the need for us to reinvent, literally reinvent, the way that we invent things. To reinvent the way that we invent things. To reinvent the way that we make products. William McDonough discusses how unsatisfactory it is, the systems that we've created, the designs that we've created. William McDonough is an architect and a designer, sees the world through the eye of a designer. And I thought and think that that's, and I got this the other night during his talk, it's such an interesting way to think about things. He was talking about Thomas Jefferson, of whom he is a great admirer. He lives, William McDonough lives in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is where Monticello and where Thomas Jefferson lived. So he's heavily influenced and by Thomas Jefferson, and talks about, and of course Jefferson was a great designer and inventor. And what was so interesting is he talked about the Declaration of Independence. McDonough talked about the Declaration of Independence of our country, this document, as a document of design. Right? Think about that. We think of it as a set of laws or a treatise. McDonough thinks about it from a perspective of design. What should be the design of a nation or a people, at that time a group of colonies, what should the design be, right? And he looks at the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, McDonough does, through the eyes of a designer. Think how interesting that is. I have never thought about them that way. They are design documents. They are blueprints. In the same way that one has a blueprint for a home, or a set of blueprints for a design of a part, or a set of blueprints for an industrial process, laying out assembly lines and factory components, or the design of a business plan. Right? Design. We have a world in which we live in, which is a designed world, a human designed world. There is a biological world, and there is a human designed, the technical world, which is largely a world of design. And of course, as I just pointed out, even our political systems are the result of design. Or, as McDonough would say and point out, the lack of design. For McDonough, where we see problems, wherever you see problems, you know, it is very often a design flaw. Very often where you see problems, it is the result of a flaw in the conception. And another word he used the other night was intention. A flaw in the design as it is applied to intention. If, for example, our intention is to have a clean planet or a clean city of Houston, and you look around at the systems, the transportation systems, as they may be. The building systems. If you look at these different systems, do they uphold our intention? If your stated intention, according to McDonough, if your stated intention is to have a clean city, does it make sense that the systems look the way they look? And if the and if there are problems, for example, if we're looking at mass traffic jams on freeways, in McDonough's world, that is a flaw of design, right? We understand that. It's a flaw in design. And so McDonough sees flaws in design, you know, everywhere he looks. And for him, it calls into his mind whether we are controverting our own stated intentions or whether we don't have any intentions in the first place. As humans, to take care of our planet, to take care of this world. He would rather us acknowledge we don't have any intention of having a clean place, a clean planet. We don't have any intention of having good transportation systems. He'd rather us just come out and say, the reason our systems are so flawed in design is because we don't literally have any intention of having a world that is safe and clean, safe for children, full of integrity, non-toxic, you name it. We don't have any intention of it. He would rather us come clean about that. Would rather us come clean about that than to sit and try to maintain, oh, well, this is the way our design is. This is the way it's supposed to be. There's no way we can fix it. Because for McDonough, the very design flaws that we see everywhere are evidence that we are out of tune, out of harmony with our own intentions. Or, alternatively, we don't even intend to have a clean world. McDonough doesn't believe that, though. McDonough does not believe that humans do not intend for a better world. I have to tell you, I've been thinking about these issues a lot in my own professional life lately. As a financial advisor, my job, as I've talked about many times, is to move the savings of my clients into projects. That is an awesome responsibility. Right? Now, most people, when they get an advisor, they think, well, your job is to make me money, right? But I'm trying to take you all a little bit deeper today. No, the job is to move excess capital, as I've talked about, is to move excess capital from savers to projects. You are a saver if you have more capital than you have projects. Right? Let's say you've got $1 million in savings. You're not going to send your kids to school. They've already gone to school. You're not going to start a business. Maybe you're for retirement. You've got more money than you have ideas at this point that can generate returns. So that money has to find its way to projects. That ultimately, as I've discussed on the show, is the role of finance. And it's why having solid financial intermediaries is such a critical thing. And it's why it's an honorable profession when done right. Whether you're an advisor or a banker or whatever. Why it is such a shame that these jobs have fallen really into disrepute in the general mind of the public. Not everywhere. And so my question that I've been thinking about is the system that we have, is it functioning to move capital from savers to projects? Meaning, are we moving capital, badly needed, scarce, not just lying around on the street corner, right? You can't just go find capital and pick it up off the street. If it was that abundant, you know, we wouldn't have problems. So, to move capital from projects, I'm sorry, to move capital from savers to projects, that is the goal. And is our system set up to move capital to the most needed and best projects that we have, that face us? And I've been thinking about these issues for weeks. You know, it's a real existential question when a financial advisor starts wondering, you know, am I in my office, in my little practice, you know, as compared to all the flows of capital across the world, am I getting money, capital, financial capital, into projects that need to be done? And if I'm not, William McDonough would suggest there's a design flaw. There's a flaw in the design. You and I know how many projects there are that need to get done. And, of course, over the past week, if you follow the financial press, you know, you've continued to see talk about, is the U.S. economy slowing down? You know, this kind of nonsense. When everybody knows that consumption and capital flows continue very, very rapidly in this country, the question isn't, you know, is there money? The question is the money getting into the hands of projects that need to get done? Is the system working? Is the system of finance working? And, of course, not just is the system of finance working, William McDonough would wonder, is the system of design of industrial products and processes also working? Is it working in a world where people finish a product, finish using it, and it goes to a landfill? One of the principles of Cradle to Cradle that seems obvious now, but when McDonough wrote the book, it was really not. One of the principles of Cradle to Cradle was that products these days and in the future should be designed so that when people are finished with them, the materials can be reused. The product can be disassembled. Those products that have biological components can go back to nature. Those products that are manufactured and made out of things like metal or plastic, they can re-enter the product stream in a useful way and have second and third and fourth and fifth lives, perhaps even infinite lives. Well, you know, one of the heartening things that I saw the other night in McDonough's talk, and I know that this is hard for KPFT listeners maybe to absorb or appreciate or agree with, but McDonough does lots and lots of consulting with large corporate customers. I mean, he put up a slide, and you've seen those slides, right? Where the logos, it's a corporate logo slide, right? It's got Walmart here, and it's got whatever Exxon there, and McDonald's. You know, McDonough is actively consulting with these companies. He has a corporate consulting practice. He describes himself as a commercial person. It's the world he lives in. And I got to tell you, when I'm making investments for clients, even into something as basic and simple as an index fund, that's where capital's going. It's going there as well. So it was heartening for me to hear that McDonough believes that the influence that he has, when he talks about Cradle to Cradle, when he does consulting with these companies, he seems to indicate they're getting it. I mean, I felt that that's what he was saying the other night. I don't know if anyone else was there. I'd love for you to call in today and let me know if you were at the talk, whether you also heard McDonough saying he feels that when he is talking cradle to cradle with these companies, when he is retained to talk about the life cycle of their products, the design of their buildings, the integrity of their transportation systems, that they're listening. talked about Walmart. He talked about the fact, and he was emphatic about this. He was emphatic that Walmart stores will be all running on solar by some date, you know, reasonably soon. Okay, pretty good. I've talked to you before about how Walmart has been leaning on suppliers to reduce packaging, reduce form factors, get more onto trucks so we don't have empty space sitting on trucks. So look, I'm not here to tell you I'm not here to tell you that all is good. But I have to say that I can't see any other way out other than for everybody on this planet to adopt a cradle-to-cradle mentality. And if the way that our large corporations are going to adopt a cradle-to-cradle mentality, life through end of life through rebirth, which is what cradle-to-cradle implies, right? It implies a rebirth of materials rather than a landfilling, a death of them. And, of course, I'm talking to you in a city, the city of Houston, that is absolutely run abysmally by the current political administrations with regard to recycling materials. The system is totally inadequate for what is required. Totally inadequate. So, you know, we got to fix it here. Everyone's got to adopt a cradle-to-cradle mentality. We've got to have the William McDonoughs of the world going into large corporations and, as an advisor, moving capital into securities. We've got to have advisors who continue to ask that question, too. Are we moving capital into the right places? I like to think that when I buy clients' shares in a municipal bond fund, I like to think that that money's going to schools, to build new schools. And I am seeing new schools built throughout the city of Houston. I would like to think as an advisor that I had something to do with that. You know? I'd like to think that I as an advisor had something to do with solar panels going on to every Walmart. And I'd like to think that you had something to do with it, too. You may have heard of a group called Franklin Templeton, very large investment firm. They were in my office yesterday. And one of the funds that I favor, let's say, is a fund called the Templeton Global Bond Fund. Very successful fund, very large fund. It's a fund that buys the sovereign debt of foreign governments. And if you look at the portfolio, and you can, it holds bonds of the government of Poland, the government of South Korea, the governments of Mexico and Brazil. And of course, when representatives from Franklin Templeton and other companies like that come to see me, the advisor, what do they want to talk about? Oh, here's how the returns are, right? Let's look at the returns, right? Here, did 5% last quarter, 10% last year, whatever the number is. They want to talk about the returns. And because I'm in this mood, this funk I've been in thinking about these issues and inspired and egged on by William McDonough's talk the other night, I stopped him and I said, you know, Matt, that was the rep's name, Matt. I said, Matt, let me just stop you right here. Matt's based in Tampa, right? He works for a California company. He's based in Tampa, flies all over and meets with people like me. I said, let me stop you, Matt. I said, you know, one of the things I'd really like to know and the thing I wonder about is, you know, I understand your fund is good and your manager's great and the returns have been this. I said, but what I really, really would like to know is, and I wonder about, is the money that I'm sending from my clients into this fund making its way to the governments of Poland and South Korea and Mexico and Brazil? Are those governments doing the right thing with the money to make the world a better place? You know, that's what I really want to know. And I don't necessarily want to know it in terms of returns, some number. You know, I kind of like to get an example. What did that money go to? Why don't you come back? And I suggested to him, I said, Matt, next time you come back, I want you to tell me, what did the government of Mexico do with the money that we sent in for the bonds? What did the government of South Korea do with the money that we sent in for the bonds? Yeah, I'd like to know that. Did they do something cradle to cradle with it, or did they do something? Did they do the other thing? Did they do the thing that is out of harmony and out of tune with what my intention is as a person? With what I hope everyone's intention is as a person, although I know it's not the case. The interconnectedness of all. The critical well-being that we get from the earth and planet that we live on and the universe. That's ultimately the measure of any capitalist system. And I use that with a small c, not our capitalist system, because all systems are capitalistic. All systems require capital. They all do. Any system, any economic system relies on capital. And what I always want to know and have been thinking about lately is it the case? Is it the case that capital is flowing to the projects that need to get done? What do you think needs to get done when you look out on design flaws? You know, where does it just stand out to you that how can this be the design? The problem is so clear that there's got to be a design flaw, a la William McDonough. And where is the design flaw? What correction should be made in the design to make it better? Where do you see design flaws? When you look out in the world, what projects do you see? Where would you want your capital to go to? And then, of course, whose hands should the capital go through to get to the projects? Right, when we talk about hedge fund managers and pension fund managers and, you know, people like me, advisors, hell, governments, what are we talking about? We're talking about people who touch the money on its way to where it really can do some good. You know, and we're kind of the gatekeepers. We decide you get money and you don't. And that project gets money and that one doesn't. Think how critical it is that we have the right people in those positions. And that's why it's so critical that how you spend your money, how you allocate your capital, where you devote it to, is so critical. Because maybe even more than your democratic vote, maybe even more than your selection for a candidate for office, although please don't misunderstand me, that is critical. It is a privilege that is indispensable. But on a daily basis, how you allocate your capital, perhaps there is no other thing that speaks more prominently, loudly, impactfully about how the world will turn out than that. This is the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host. The phone number here is 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. We're straight up about 3:30. When we come back, we're going to be taking your calls and talking about design flaw when we come back in just a moment.
I lost myself on a cool, damp night. I gave myself in that misty light. Was hypnotized by a strange delight under a lilac tree. I made wine from the lilac tree. Put my heart in its recipe. Makes me see what I want to see and be what I want to be.
do things I never should do. I drink much more than I ought to drink, because it brings me back you. Lilac wine is sweet and heady, like my love. Lilac wine.
Welcome back to the New Capital Show. Saw a great movie last night, courtesy of, it was shown at the Rice Media Center. Mark Judiman's group, Transition Houston, was one of the sponsors, a couple of other sponsors, Houston Green Building Council, a movie called Switch. I don't think it's been released to the general public at this point. This may have been, I think it struck me as some kind of preview engagement. The movie is called Switch. The star of it is a professor of professor of geology or science at the University of Texas at Austin, Scott Tinker, and he goes on a journey for the past couple of years, visiting all the different energy sources that we have. So he visits a coal mine and then a coal plant, and then he visits a natural gas fracking operation, and then he visits solar plant. It's great, and the photography is beautiful, and it's very highly well done. I hope you get a chance to see it. It's called Switch. And so many of the questions that I've been asking in the previous 30 minutes, are really pregnant in this movie. They're not explicit. Where should capital go? What is energy going to look like in the future? Here's an article just from about a minute ago. Natural gas is on a roll, executive declares. A perfect storm of economic and regulatory factors is driving major U.S. utilities to rapidly switch from coal to natural gas as an electric power source, the top executive of one of the nation's largest utilities said on Thursday. Nicholas K. Akins, chief executive of Ohio-based AEP, said the company plans to retire 5 of its 25 coal-burning plants and shut down coal-powered units at other plants it owns, in a shift that collectively means the elimination of about 5,000 megawatts of capacity. The result will be that by 2020, only about half of the power AEP produces will come from coal, down from about 67% last year. The surge in domestic production of cheap natural gas, largely yielded by the rise of the controversial technique of forcing gas out of shale through hydraulic fracturing, right, also known as fracking, has been a big factor in the shift. A series of new environmental regulations and pressure from environmentalists are also leading major utilities to either shut down older plants or spend billions of dollars to upgrade them. Okay, that brings me to regulations, because William McDonough did talk about regulations. Very interesting what he said about regulations. And you may remember a few weeks ago I brought to your attention that the EPA has basically now said that unless any new coal-fired power plant also comes outfitted with carbon sequestration technology, which is very expensive, it ain't going to get approved. That's at least under the current president. Who knows who knows under a Republican presidency whether that rule sticks. Those guys are, they're kind of sneaky. Republicans, I mean. They like to undo rules and regulations. But William McDonough made a very interesting point about regulations. He said he goes into companies and he says to them, hey, you want to get rid of regulations? don't call in the lobbyists. Let's just make it so you've got nothing to be worried about. Let's make it so you're not doing anything wrong. Let's redesign your systems without design flaws. Then you don't have to worry about regulation. Right? You're not doing anything wrong. Which of course, is what we say at KPFT every day. But sometimes it takes a guy like McDonough to get them to the logic of that through, you know, through the back door or something. Anyway, back to natural gas. Yes, this is happening. And I can tell you that I understand a lot of people are concerned about fracking. I understand that. We do need regulations to make sure that is done right, fracking is done right. But I got to tell you, 10 years ago I started on this radio show, and I was talking about coal and the dangers of coal and really the evil of coal-based energy. And, everyone's like, what? Coal? Whatever. And I would come on and I'd say, listen, did you know that coal accounts for 57-60% of our electricity? Did you know when you turn on the light, it's probably coming from some mining operation that dug up and blasted apart part of Wyoming and shipped it in a train down to some power plant? It's burning and emitting it into the air. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about getting your lights through that process? Is that a well-designed system? Well, here we are 10 years later. And, you know, it's not a victory for me. It's not like I did anything. I'm not in the fracking business. I didn't invent fracking. I'm not in the natural gas business. But I got to tell you, it gives me hope that at least this system that I'm helping to move capital from, that it has some ability to respond and to move us forward into the future. With that, I'm going to turn to the phones. Plenty of lines open. Scott and Mike are holding. If you want to get on, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT. Up first, I'm going to take Mike first. Okay, Mike, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, you said a lot, and you put a lot on the table, and we'll try to keep on track. Basically, what's his name, McDonough?
Yep.
Cradle to cradle. Well, Brahman, why don't we just call it karma or cycle?
He would. He would say that.
I mean, that's what it's all about. And, you know, I hate to beat a dead horse because it's been said on this radio station so many times, is our mentality of extracting and burning,
yep,
if you want to talk about energy. When you mention corporations and venture capital funds and all of this stuff, I immediately think about, okay, let's say you're Klein and Perkins or some venture capital, big venture capital fund. What's the bottom line for them? Retrieving their investment in a certain burgeoning company and a timeline that this company has to, you know, certain hoops that they have to jump through in a certain matter, amount of time. Let's say, okay, we got to break even in 3 years. If you don't, you're out. You know, and that sort of momentum to try to keep your fund increasing in value, your venture capital fund, so you can invest more in more companies, that's a momentum that leads me to think that it's still all about money. And money has a huge momentum in innovation and, just the ability to get new ideas off the ground. Here's an interesting idea. I was watching some, show by some guy, who was, I guess, a survivor contestant.
Hey, Mike, I'm the only one allowed to ramble on the New Capital Show.
Sorry about that. Yeah, Dad, have I eaten up my time?
Yeah, you're good. I mean, what I hear you saying is you concur, and it sounds like you're gratified a little bit, at least, by some of the things I've repeated of McDonough, and you sound a little bit hopeful and happy today, and that makes me happy to hear.
Well, let's say we're half and half.
Well, all right. Very good. Thanks for the call, Mike.
Thank you.
William McDonough talked about half and half. He talked about the glass being half full. He said he doesn't ever see a glass as half full or half empty. He sees it as half water and half air. Got that? You got that? I love that.
Great point.
Yeah, there it is. All right. Let's take Doug on line three. Doyle's got this video from the Good Baby Stroller Company that he's working on getting lined up. I'd hoped to bring this to you, and it looks like we might with a few minutes left. This is a company that apparently has taken William McDonough's ideas to heart and is reengineering their processes. And once we get this loaded up, we'll play some from it so you get the idea. Doug is next. Doug, welcome to New Capital Show.
Hey, thank you, Leo.
Yep.
You mentioned how we allocate our own capital, and I think that's so important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the oil and gas industry myself, and I'm contemplating buying a solar array for my house, one that's large enough to power my entire house. I don't have a very large house, but...
Doug, let me stop you real quick before I let you go on.
Yeah.
At last night's movie, a professor from Rice University, Professor Cohen was his name, very erudite guy, Harvard-educated scientist in atmospheric studies. He was on the panel that discussed the movie at the end of it, and he told everybody that as of like last week, he had just had panels installed on his home, and they are burning during the day, no energy. The house burns no energy as a result, and they actually are producing energy and putting it onto the grid. So go on.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the same situation,
yep.
And I think with my house and my roof size, I might be able to net never consume any grid electricity.
I love it.
But my point is, I said to this guy what I was looking to do, and he immediately pops back at me, you know, that'll never pay out. You'll never make a return on your investment.
Not true.
And it dawned on me instantaneously. I said to him, well, what about your BMW? What kind of a return on investment do you get from that?
Yeah.
You know, we invest our money to impress other people. The only thing you get out of a high-dollar car is social status.
Yeah.
So allocating your funds to create the world that you want, if you don't like the way chickens are treated, then you should pay attention to the way the meat you buy is handled before you buy it. You should only buy meat that's handled in a humane way.
And, Doug, I want to bring more good news because that brings to my mind an article I saw from a few days ago. Whole Foods has now told all fish suppliers, all fishermen,
that
they will no longer accept fish inventory that cannot be demonstrably proven to have been caught using sustainable methods and sustainable ways.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, my wife shops at Whole Foods, and I kind of bitch about the bill sometimes, but can't.
I agree. I'm no lover of $7 a pound chicken breast.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, they are high quality.
Well,
and you can eat less, and they're way better than the cheap stuff.
Well, I know those marketing people took a survey of, you know, Whole Foods wouldn't have taken that step without going to marketing. And they went to probably people like me, and they said, if we promise that you know that when you buy fish from us, it came through sustainable methods, if you know that, what does that do to your allegiance to the store? And I can tell you, because I am so concerned about the state of our oceans. You know, I talk about it on the show. When I heard that, I went to her, you know, my wife, and I basically said, you know, have at it. Go shop there.
They
just got my loyalty, and I don't care about the bills anymore because they are putting their capital and their design into harmony in a way that I believe. And so so you know what? Whole Foods is traded. It's in the mutual funds that I purchase for clients. I'm moving money to them. I'm happy about that.
Excellent. Enjoy your show. Thanks.
Okay, Doug. Thanks. By the way, the solar panel issue and the Professor Rice who talked about how he did it, they're leasing these now. So you can do a leasing deal where you don't have to put out all this money up front to get the solar panels on your house. You do a lease, right? It's the same way you would lease a car, you'd lease lease an office in a building, a lease. And think about that as I talk to you about finance and financial intermediaries and moving money from savers to projects. Think what a worthy financial intermediation project that is. Some bank, some large pool of capital says, we will front the money for homeowners to purchase the panels and put it on their homes. So they don't have to spend 20 grand. We know that's a tough nut, 20 grand. We want to get paid for the use of our capital, some reasonable amount. The solar panel company takes the money, does the installation, and then the homeowner agrees through a promise, which is what a lease is, to pay X amount per month for the panels. That is a project I can support. That is a design of an energy system and a financing system that I can get behind. And it's happening. And it's happening because people are making it happen. And it should give us all hope. Next up is Mark on line two. Mark, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, Leo. I'm going to have to check out this McDonough guy. Because a lot of times what makes good business sense, good economical sense, doesn't always happen. It kind of brings to mind Edward Deming, 50, 60 years ago, was, booted out of the country because the old dinosaur industries, who had all the old capital, just refused to improve quality, which was a good business sense, good economical sense. So hopefully, and it brings to mind this whole thing about Solyndra. What makes good business sense, good economical sense, good social sense for our country? We have some intransigent interests that could care less about that stuff. But if you look around the world, other countries say that's a good idea, and they're moving on it. China, they're moving on solar big.
Well, and we're benefiting from it, Mark, because those panels that are going on homes that I just told you about, and that our last caller just said he wanted to do, and the professor last night put on his, and I've got them out at my country place. I don't have them here at my home in Houston. Frankly, I don't know if they'd work here because I got a big, big oak tree. They might. I don't know. But those panels are probably Chinese. So, it's not great that our solar industry is kind of going by the wayside and is not competing. But, one of the benefits is that we are getting cheap solar panels real quick, and they're getting cheaper by the minute. And that holds a lot of promise for solar power in this country. McDonough talked about solar. He said a lot of people don't know what's coming, and it's coming very soon. We are on the cusp of a solar build-out in this country like nobody can believe. Of course, the sunnier parts of the country, including Texas. We are on the cusp of a solar revolution. So
right.
It's exciting times, Mark. It really is. And I left McDonough's talk feeling like, maybe the capital flow, maybe the system is somehow going to get it into the right hands and in the right ways. We'll see. Mark, great to have you.
We need more guys on Wall Street like you that think this way.
Well, we do. I mean, there's no question. We do. And we will. They will get there. And they're getting there. Listen, don't think it's just me. They're getting there. Not every single one of those bastards is just a greedy, SOB up there. They're just not. There are going to be many who start to see that their function is to move capital to good projects and change our world, and especially in the younger generation. Great to have you, Mark.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks. Let's go to Scott. Scott, get ready. You ready, Scott? I'm teasing you a little bit here. Here we go. All right, Scott.
Thank
welcome.
Several times.
There we go. Welcome to the show.
Okay. Recently, I had to replace the batteries in the radio I'm using right now. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Radio Shack on Westheimer near Mary's and bought some more replacement batteries to hold in reserve. Also, they did accept old batteries, but they said in the future I would need to wrap them individually in little baggies for some reason. Don't understand why, but they did accept them for recycling. They said not too many other places do.
Scott, I don't know. What I've been told about just regular alkaline batteries is that they can be thrown away. That they're not like the old kind years and years ago, full of acid and all this, but that they're just very, very non-toxic. I really don't know. That's the latest word. I've looked to see whether I can recycle them. Larger batteries, yes, of course. Rechargeable batteries, yes. But just kind of the standard AAA or AA, I don't know that those are recyclable. Okay?
Okay.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
No video, right, Doyle? Won't load?
Yeah, unfortunately, okay. It's running a little slow.
All right. By the way, I get emails all the time as an advisor. I'm on all these lists for companies to read their, you know, like I was telling you, Franklin Templeton sends me stuff, and Fidelity sends me stuff, and Vanguard, and I got one today from MFS. You may have heard of MFS, big mutual fund company. And the title of this email is Strategies for Slow Growth Markets, the implication being that we're in a slow growth market. Slow growth. You know, William McDonough would look at this and say, of all the design flaws that I see lying around everywhere I look, how can we possibly be in a slow growth world? Look at all the damn fixing we've got to do. How can that be slow growth? We're living in a world of design flaws everywhere he looks. You know, apparently even in our own government, right? Apparently our Constitution has some design flaws possibly, given the results that we often get from our governments. How can we be in a slow growth world, right? A slow growth world is one where there's no projects, no good projects, nothing to do. Right? Nothing to grow. It's just static. Nothing going on. We wake up and we twiddle our thumbs because it's all perfect. Is that the world we're living in that you can perceive? So it just shows you how, you know, delusional and wrong even massive financial intermediaries like the MFS company, one of the earliest and oldest mutual fund companies, is sending me, an advisor based in Houston, Texas, an email that's talking about strategies for a slow growth world. And I'm getting this going, do I really need to do business with you guys? If you guys can't even see that we're, you know, it's not a slow growth world, it's a world full of design flaws that need to get rectified quickly. Back to the phones. Line four is Dean. Dean, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, Leo. I have two questions, and then I'll hang up.
All right.
The first one is about sustainably fishing the oceans. If you read the accounts of what the oceans were like 500 years ago and how full of fish they were, then to me, you know, compared to what they're like today, then there would be no such thing as sustainable fishing today.
Yeah.
So depleted.
Yeah, we'd catch no fish. We'd go off fish.
Yeah, the only thing sustainable is to stop fishing. Okay, the other thing is, I was at the movie last night, too, and one of the questions I had was, you know, looking at the solar panels and the wind turbines, and I'm curious as to how much energy is embodied in a solar panel or a wind turbine compared to how much that panel or wind turbine will produce over its lifespan.
You mean how much energy it took to produce it?
Yeah, to mine the materials and to produce it and to truck it and to all those things.
Dean, it's a great, 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 fantastic question. And I don't know the answer to it. I simply don't know. But
yeah.
My guess is that you come out ahead and probably well ahead. That's what I'm guessing. You know, if we think about just think about a mass of coal that is the same size as a solar panel, right? Correct? Oh, okay, we dropped them. Okay. Anyway, so we dropped you, Dean, but if you're still listening, just think about a mass of coal that weighs the same as a solar panel, right? It's the same size. Think about a piece of coal that's in the shape of a solar panel. How much energy is that amount of coal going to supply? We have to ship it. We have to mine it. We have to do all those things to it. This, in some senses, the same things that we have to do to the solar panel to bring it into existence, as it were. And how long will that coal last? You know, a nanosecond in the boiler? So my guess is that the solar panel comes out well ahead. I'm just guessing. Let me go to line two. This is George. Maybe it's George Ryder, a physicist, who can answer this, but we'll see. George, welcome to the show. Not George Ryder.
But I just want to say I'm an avid angler. I like to fish. I do think that something, you know, as a conservationist, you know, I put a lot of fish back. I released two large fish this week at a several I caught. I had eight trout I caught. I released three of them. I kept five. You can keep 10. I'm going to self-impose half that from now on in the future, because I think of the population and the pressure warrants it. But now, I'll tell you, one of the most important things in that aspect is going to be your freshwater inflows. That's what I'm very concerned with, especially in light of last year, into our bay systems and our estuaries.
Yep.
If we do not get, it's critical. That's going to do more towards, and don't look at all recreational fishing for people like myself. It's almost like zen.
George, you're not, you guys aren't, the recreational fishermen are not doing the damage. It's this mass fishermen.
We do put, there's a certain amount of pressure,
sure.
I can tell you, through my experience, you know, over the years, I've witnessed it. You know, I'm 57 years old, but, you know, so you do have to, stay on top of that sort of thing. But
you
got to
be conscious. George, I got to run. I'm out of time, but thanks for the call. Everybody needs a cradle-to-cradle mentality. It's just the way that it goes. A caller has called in and said 2 years for the solar panels. Is that right, Doyle?
That's what he said.
The idea there is that basically once you pass the two-year mark, then the solar panel is free energy, free and clear. It has surmounted its hurdle rate, its opportunity cost, as it were, and from then on. So I think that given that, solar panels are a great investment. Solar's a great investment. And, you know, it's the sun. It's why we're here. It's what produces us and the rest of our planet. So, as I say, William McDonough believes we are about to hit a serious inflection point on solar. I hope it's the case. And, if anything, I hope that today's show has inspired you to go pick up a copy of Cradle to Cradle. If you haven't read it, you will find it to be fascinating. That does it. NewCapitalShow.com on Facebook, LeoGold.NewCapitalShow. Friend me. Thanks to Doyle. As always, stay tuned for KPFT local news and then the rest of our news hour, Al Jazeera and Democracy Now! Stay tuned right here.
Hello, this is Dr. Drew Houlihan, principal of Parker Elementary School, reminding you that April is National Poetry Month. In celebration, Writers in the Schools is offering a poem a day, showcasing poetry written by local children. Parker Elementary is pleased to participate by sharing these poems with you on KPFT through the voices of our own talented students. And now, here is your poem of the day.
Hi, my name is Gabriel Arnold, and I'm in the fourth grade at Parker Elementary. Here's a poem written by Isabella, who is in the third grade. Horse Barn. When we get there, the horses in their stalls paw the dirt. I cough in the dust. We grab the feed, and they whinny at me when I pass by. I get a brush, very tenderly. I scrape off the dirt. They're as dusty and steamy as a train when it chugs down the track. When we feed the mares, their babies skip after us. They run so fast, they fall.
This has been the Wits Poem of the Day. I'm Heather Grosso, a first grade teacher at Parker Elementary, Houston's original magnet school for music, inviting you to get your poem a day by calling Wits at 713-523-3877 or by visiting online at writersintheschools.org. This is KPFT, Houston.